don't.
Is that what time it is? I thought it was 7:07.
Call to order the meeting of the House State Affairs Committee. Today is Wednesday, March 20th, 1991. Time is 8:40 a.m. Have Representatives Moyer, Choquette, Baker, and Covina present. We do have a quorum. Today we'll be hearing HDR 13 relating to the 25th Annual Boys State, HDR 12 relating to the Susitna Basin Motorized Use Restrictions, SB 32 relating to PERS benefits for youth center employees, HB 95 relating to Alaska Klondike Gold Rush Centennial Commission, HDR 27 relating to support of the Federal Act on Violence Against Women, and HDR 1 relating to the right to keep and bear arms. If there's anyone that wishes to testify, please make sure you sign the register in total, including your address and numbers. First thing I'd like to take up is HDR 13. This bill was held over to the last committee meeting. Representative Moyer.
Chairman, I move that we pass from committee HDR 13 and there's a recommendation that's unanimous consent.
Is there any objection to moving HDR 13? HDR 13 is moved from committee with end of the recommendations. Next, I'd like to take up HDR 12. HDR 12 by Representative Choquette relating to the Susitna Basin Recreation Rivers Management Plan and requesting the Commissioner of Natural Resources to reconsider the portion of the management plan that restricts motorized uses on Lake Creek, Alexander Creek, Proto Creek, Deshka, Moose Creek, Deshka, and the you want to say that one, Representative Choquette?
Sorry?
If you can't say it, you don't get the bill here.
Talitha.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
I'm taking HDR 12 and putting in a subcommittee. Representative Choquette, would you please chair a subcommittee? Representative Baker, would you serve on that subcommittee?
Yes.
You may report back to us when you're done subcommitteeing here.
Your pleasure.
Next, I'd like to take up Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 32. This is a bill we previously heard in committee, similar bill to House Bill 47, which we also heard. We do have a how should we handle this? We will take up an amendment at this section. I think what we'll do is I'll take at this time a motion to amend to include in the body the supervisor of a juvenile probation program, or if that, or the appropriate words thereof.
I would make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
There is a motion by Representative Choquette for that amendment. Are there objections to the amendment? Hearing no objections, that amendment is adopted. Now, when we send this back to legal,
we're looking for Mary.
Yeah. Well, she's gone.
We need to deal with this contract resolution.
Representative Donnelly, just to let you know, it'll probably be about 5 or 10 after 9.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Including in the amendment, we'll take a title change. This is a Senate bill, so the Senate bill, in order to change the title, we would have to have a concurrent resolution. I do have a concurrent resolution before us and would entertain a motion for a rule to suspend the rule 41B, 24C, and 35 Alaska Legislature concerning Senate Bill 32 relating to certain juvenile correction institution employees.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
There has been a motion to approve the resolution. Is there objection to the resolution? Hearing no objections, the title will be changed to so that we can include this language that has been amended, and the current resolution will be forwarded to the Rules Committee. Now accept the motion on the bill itself.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass the bill out of committee with individual recommendations.
There is a motion to move Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 32, State Affairs House. Is there objection? Hearing no objection. Bill is passed on. Representative Davis, would you join us, please?
Yes, I will, please.
I am in the middle of also a meeting with the Anietza Valdez Oldsville settlement.
Yes.
So I'm going to have to leave for a few minutes. I'm going to turn the meeting over to the Vice Chairman of the Committee, Sam Moyer, and he will conduct it. I know he'll do a great job.
I got a little bit of a turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I can't leave.
You wanted a quorum call.
Yeah, the will was on.
If you want to move.
Are you going to have a quorum here?
Well, I'll stay with Representative Davis. Representative Davis?
Yes, Representative.
The next item on our agenda is HBR 27 by Representative Betty Davis. HBR 27 encouraged the United States Congress to pass Senate Bill or S-15, the Violence Against Women Act of 1991. Representative Davis.
Thank you so much, Representative Cabina. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and I know that you have another meeting to go, and I appreciate that you're going to stay here to listen to the few remarks that I have to make. This is an opportunity for the members of this committee to pass something that would be very effective throughout the United States. All we are doing is asking that we encourage Congress to pass S-15, which is a federal legislation. This resolution is to express support on the part of the state of Alaska, expressing that S-15 federal legislation to provide national leadership and funding for programs to end violence against women. S-15 is expected to increase funds for prosecutors, police, public safety departments, shelters, and rape crisis centers, and to increase prevention, intervention, and to respond to this growing national problem. We all know that this is a national problem, and over the years, more and more women are continue to be battered. For this reason, I'm asking that this committee would speedily pass this piece of legislation on to the next committee so that we may send our letters to the people that are listed within the contents of this resolution so that they know that we support the legislation. And we're asking that it goes to the President of the Senate, the Secretary, the Speaker of the House, and to our congressional delegation in D.C. itself. I do have some professional people here that could speak to the growing problem if you would like to have that testimony. Otherwise, they're just here to say that they pledge their support, and we do have a package of people that support legislation. A similar piece of legislation has passed through the Judiciary Committee on the Senate side as of yesterday, I think it was. And I would like for you to take favorable consideration of this legislation.
Well, thank you, Representative Davis. It is the intention of the chair to move the bill from the committee, or should I say the resolution. For the record, yes. Representative Bruckman is joined the committee at 8:40. I note that she's also a co-sponsor of this resolution.
Yes.
I myself will be glad to join and will do so.
Appreciate it.
Also note there's a zero fiscal note, and I do appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for Representative Davis? If not, thank you, Betty.
Thank you very much.
Representative Choquette.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask for unanimous consent that we move the resolution out of committee.
I'd be glad to entertain that. The testimony sheet does not show anybody wishing to testify, and if that's the case, we'll accept that motion. And HR 27 is moved to committee. Next, we'll hear from Representative Mackey in HB 95. Okay, thank you. We're working on teleconference. HB 95, Representative Mackey, would establish the Alaska Klondike Gold Rush Centennial Commission. You have in your packets a draft committee substitute offered by the bill sponsor. The draft CS creates a centennial task force under the Alaska Historical Commission in the Division of Parks and Rec. as opposed to the original bill's intent, which would have established an office of, a commission in the office of the governor. Representative Mackey, if you proceed with your testimony, we're ready to take you and remind you you are in teleconference.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the committee taking the time to hear this bill today. The reason we asked for it to be heard today is because we've had a delegation from the UConn in town, and but apparently they've had to fly out this morning, so they're not here. But I would point out a letter in your packet from the Minister of Tourism for the Yukon Territory Government in regards to this particular bill. I'd like to point your attention away from the original bill that I had submitted and ask you to take a look at the CS that I've offered for your consideration, the CS for House Bill 95, an act establishing the Alaska Klondike Gold Rush Centennial Task Force and providing for an effective date. We've gone from the commission idea to a task force after meeting with the administration and DNR and other people that you know, that could probably manage this commission, and it didn't make a lot of sense to try to push through a commission that the governor wasn't going to accept, and this is something that they're willing to support wholeheartedly. And I think Mr. Tanner will be here to speak to the governor. I don't see him here, but
he was here earlier, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's probably around out in the hallway. I'd like to read a brief sponsor statement. I'm submitting for the committee's review of the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 95. The committee substitute addresses several concerns that were presented to me as work has continued on this piece of legislation. The first issue of concern was that the legislative findings in Section 1 of the original bill does not accurately reflect the historical facts of the gold rush of 1898. The proposed committee substitute makes the necessary corrections. The second issue is the size of the fiscal note attached to creating a commission and placing it in the office of the governor. To address the expense of a new commission, I'm proposing to eliminate the position of executive secretary to the commission. This will reduce the fiscal impact and will not create a new position that is hard to justify in the early days of the commission. Third, a change is being made in the location and title of the commission. The change is being made in response to a suggestion from the Office of the Governor to create a task force rather than a commission. It was further suggested that a more appropriate location for this constituted task force would be within the Alaska Historical Commission in the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. These changes are also reflected in the proposed committee substitute. I recommend that the changes presented be accepted by the committee, and your positive consideration is greatly appreciated. Just briefly, in your packet, you'll see a copy of that proposed CS. Mr. Chairman, you'll also see a letter, which I don't need to read. I understand we're under somewhat of a time crunch, and there are people here that would like to testify. There is a letter from the Minister of Tourism from the Yukon Territory. They're very excited about working with the state of Alaska. Also, the National Park Service, the director of the Klondike National Park, is one of the people that suggested that we do this particular piece of legislation. They are going to be fully cooperative, and it's my intent to have Alaska do their part in a cooperative effort to promote the 100-year centennial of the Klondike Gold Rush. It'll benefit immensely Alaska, not just Southeast Alaska, but up through the Klondike, and certainly will benefit the Yukon Territory and the Federal National Park Service and so forth. I think that the attention, promotion, and so on and so forth that will come out of this event will have everlasting effects on Alaska and the Yukon Territory. You'll see in your packet from the Legislative Research Agency a memorandum to me dated March 18 from Deborah Davidson, which outlines in here an analysis of the boards and commissions and task force. The second part of it is the legislative appropriations to committees established to commemorate events or people. You'll see a list of all of the different anniversary commissions and task force and special events that have been created over the years and how much it cost the state and what exactly their charge was. And that's just simply for your information to show that that we have done things like this in the past. The benefits to be derived from the establishment of the commission, first of all, the passage of the bill will establish the task force. First of all, it will oversee the organization of a significant celebration commemorating the role played by Alaska in the Klondike Gold Rush of 1897 and 98. The celebration will be held in 97 and 98, and sufficient lead time is required for staging some of the events that are expected to take place. You'll see a further analysis of what the task force would accomplish, and I don't need to go into that and read all of that, but that information is there for you. There's an objective, short-term goals and objectives. There's suggested annual themes and different information that has been suggested to us, which I thought is appropriate, and certainly I would hope would accompany the legislation. Also, you'll see in your packet an analysis of the total and average visitor in-state expenditures by region. We've broken it down into Southeast, South Central, Interior, Southwest, Denali, McKinley, the Ferry at Sea region, and undistributed region, showing the number of millions of dollars that presently come into the state by the visitor industry. And we broke it down into regions, and we also broke it down into the top 10 communities in Alaska that are affected by tourism, the amount of dollars that are affected, the percentages of increases and so forth, just to give you an idea of the impact that the tourism industry and a very significant event of this nature, the type of impact that it could have on Alaska as a whole, not just one particular area. Certainly this piece of legislation is of great interest to me because it does affect the first part of it, which is Skagway and Haines, which is in my district, and that draws my initial attention to this particular piece of legislation. However, the effects that it will have statewide are very immense, so I'll point that out. You'll see in your letter also a letter of support from the City of Skagway, a resolution from the Skagway Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Skagway Centennial Committee. You'll see a letter of support from the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. I believe Joe Poore, who's the executive director, is here to testify for them today. A letter of support from the Juneau Gold Rush Commission, and so on and so forth. With that, Mr. Chairman, as I pointed out, I believe the administration supports the bill. I don't know if Mr. Tanner's here yet, and would be happy to help work on funding it. As far as cutting out the executive secretary position, what we've done is probably reduced the fiscal note, original fiscal note that was also in your packet. I'm just looking for it. I didn't see it.
Right here.
Okay, it was $148,000. We've probably reduced it by about 66% on that fiscal note, simply because within DNR, they do have the capabilities of, within the Historic Commission, to do the administrative type of support services for this task force. So that was to employ a new person and create this new position and everything, that was where the major expense was coming from. However, it probably will have a fiscal note of somewhere near $60,000, but the administration is reluctant to provide us with that fiscal note until after we adopt the CS, and that becomes our vehicle of legislation. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Mackey. I do have one right off. I note that the governor appoints seven people out of five individuals with a sincere interest and two recognized their expertise. And relays your comments about the Canadians' interests. Is it possible, or is the intention of the sponsor, that any Canadian citizens be appointed to this task force?
That would certainly be acceptable to me. I don't have any agenda for that particular makeup of the board. Mr. Chairman, I think probably you and your committee would be in a better position. The International Trade and Tourism Committee might be in a better position to make recommendations on that makeup. However, I was reluctant to put in there that X number of people would be from the Canadian government because we're talking about state dollars, and I didn't really know how that came into play. I would expect the Yukon government to contribute their own dollars and personnel to this effort, and so it'll be a joint venture, and I think that if we get some federal dollars and Yukon dollars and Alaska dollars, it'll make it economically a lot better for everyone involved and have an expanded effort.
Thank you, Representative Bruckman. You had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's been answered. I was most curious about the new fiscal note.
That's correct. And the governor's office will provide that fiscal note just as soon as the committee chooses to use the CS as a vehicle and look at a task force versus the commission. And just as soon as we get that, we'll provide it to you.
Thank you, Representative Choquette. You have a question.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question on the fiscal note also. If it's reduced by 66%, Representative Mackey, we're talking about an FY92 appropriation of $50,000 and 2 cents. And I'm sure we'll be taking up a committee substitute. So that would be presented to us.
That is the best estimate of what I have. Until I see what the administration comes down. You know, if you want to look at that, I don't know what I did with my, I apologize, I don't have my fiscal note. Can I borrow your fiscal note? If you take a look inside the fiscal note itself, Representative Choquette, the second page, you'll see personnel services, $56,005. That's a particular executive secretary. Take that out right there automatically. There were other contractual things and down here, which is $68,000. A lot of those things that we hope that DNR through the Historical Commission, which is what they do, is to provide technical support to these types of events, can absorb that. DNR can absorb a lot of those costs within their own people that they already have employed. And I should say that the changes made to this particular bill and this fiscal note are not only at the suggestion of the governor, but my staff, Linda, has been working with DNR's people and all the parties concerned in addressing this particular issue, and they don't have any problem. They would like to have it in there, so there's not going to be any objections from them.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative McKenna.
If I might, I think I'm pleased to see this go into a commission, or go into a task force rather than a commission. We've got 150 commissions in the state now. I have one question, Representative Mackey. Is there any type of hope for some private sector financial involvement in this commission?
Well, I guess I'm very supportive of tourism, but I'm definitely not an expert on tourism. I think that, you know, perhaps AVA, first of all, Alaska Visitors Association really supports this bill and other tourism industries, and I would hope that they would want to do that. It would be in everybody's interest that we get the private sector involved. However, Representative Choquette, I don't have a plan for that. I don't think that's up to me to put that plan together because I'm not knowledgeable of that, but I would think that it would certainly be attractive to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Brown.
No question, I would move.
I believe a few people did travel into town.
Yes, she was just moving the adoption of the CS, and we can do that at this time.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Thank you.
No objections.
No objections. At this time, we do have online the state archaeologist from DNR, Judy Bittner, on teleconference. I know Bruce Kendall is here as well. Bruce, do you mind if we take the DNR archaeologist on teleconference?
As the administration approves it.
Fine. Judy, are you there?
Yes, this is Judy Bittner.
Okay, Judy, you have stated your name, but you state your affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, I'd like to thank the chairman and the other members of the committee for the opportunity to hook me up by teleconference so I can testify today on House Bill 95. Before I go further, am I coming through okay?
Yes, you are.
Okay. My name is Judy Bittner. I am the Alaska's State Historic Preservation Officer. I administer the state's history and archaeology program through the Office of History and Archaeology in the Department of Natural Resources in the Division of Parks. The Alaska Historical Commission, which is a governor's appointed commission, is also housed within the Office of History and Archaeology. I am providing testimony on behalf of the Department of Natural Resources today. The Department of Natural Resources supports the intent of this bill, the Alaska's gold rush history being a significant economic asset with regard to the visitor industry, as well as a vehicle for explaining the role of mining in the settlement and growth of the state. Last fall, the Alaska Historical Commission proposed to Governor Hickel that a task force be created to assist the state in planning and celebrating the significant anniversaries in the decade of the 90s. The department recommends that the scope of the commission or task force be expanded to include celebrations across the state during the Gold Rush era of 1896 to 1906. Celebrations should coordinate with the Gold Rush events planned with Canada when appropriate. The department further recommends that the Alaska Klondike Gold Rush Commission be a special project under the auspices of the Alaska Historical Commission to benefit from the procedures already in place through the Department of Natural Resources. That concludes my testimony, and I will take any questions, or if anyone has any questions, I'll be willing to answer them.
Thank you, Judy. I do have one question that comes to mind. Am I correct in saying that the Historical Commission has all but been deactivated? And if that's the case, to what extent do you have the financial and staff resources to staff the task force?
I would be looking for, we have some of the infrastructure, the secretarial help, but if there was to be a task force with someone coordinating and writing up a report, that we would need some assistance to an historian to do so. We'll need some staff assistance. We have positions and seasonal positions in place. We would not have to create a new position, but we would need some financial support because our office is run on a project basis. So any of what we do is on special project funds.
Thank you, Judy. Any other questions for Ms. Bittner? Don't recall seeing, am I correct? Is there a DNR fiscal note, Jerry?
No, there's not, Mr. Chairman. In consulting with my staff, who has been working with Mrs. Bittner, that is the potential $60,000 fiscal note that I'm talking about. Will encompass that particular activity into it.
Fiscal note. If there's no further questions for Judy, then thank you very much for your teleconference testimony. At this time, I'd like to call on Bruce Kendall from the Office of the Governor.
My name is Bruce Kendall. I'm legislatively assigned to the governor's office. The governor's office. This bill's intent we support. We like the task force part of it. We like the fact that it'll be continuity with the 1992 celebration of the Alaska Highway's 50th anniversary. We think that there's a lot of good that comes out of the coordination with our neighbor, Canada, because we're going to have a lot of problems to solve between the two for ANWR and other things. And we can't see that the fiscal part of it is a big item compared to what it's going to do.
Thank you, Mr. Kendall. Are there any questions for Mr. Kendall? If not, thank you again for your testimony. I have next on my list to call upon Joe Poor. Mr. Poor.
Thank you. My name is Joe Poor. I'm the Executive Director of the Chamber of Commerce here in Juneau. And I was asked yesterday to step in for Mr. Roger Griffith, who had to leave the area. And he's probably been the primary coordinator of this effort, he in conjunction with Mr. Clay Alderson up in Skagway. I was not aware of the committee substitute that Representative Mackey referenced to, so you have to pardon me. Some of the comments that have been supplied to me make reference to the commission. In view of the time on this particular project, and I believe Representative Mackey indicated that in your package you have the celebration objective, which shows a suggested annual themes and short-term goals. You have the Skagway Centennial Committee Resolution, 1991. I'm not sure that you're aware of the National Park Service commitment to this project. I have before me a list of the projects that they plan, either they have investments currently or they plan to go through some restoration projects. Their projection up through 1996 will amount to a total investment within Skagway as far as historic buildings of over $9 million. They're very supportive of this particular project. And as you look through their proposed projects, it's all in conjunction with building towards the 1998 celebration. I also have a list here of the benefits derived by the state of Alaska. It's a two-page, and what I'd like to do instead is just highlight a few, if I may. Number four, the celebration has the potential of increasing the numbers of travelers who come to Alaska, and by properly publicizing and promoting the centennial, the state will derive maximum economic benefit through increased spending by tourists while in Alaska. The cruise ship companies need 4 to 5 years lead time to include special events into their promotional materials. By establishing this task force at this time, we will be able to meet this lead time requirement. The events of the centennial will instill in the citizens of the state of Alaska an awareness of and appreciation for the significance of the events of the Klondike Gold Rush of 1898. The centennial of the Klondike Gold Rush is a significant international event with many communities throughout Alaska having important historic themes tied to mining. Having a state government level commission, task force, will give legitimacy to the Gold Rush Centennial Celebration and will elevate the event to a stature benefiting an event of this magnitude rather than restrict the scope only to Southeast Alaska and the Inside Passage. Tourism is based on the centennial of the Gold Rush and will have a substantial fallout effect on other attractions throughout the state. Persons attracted to Alaska by the Gold Rush will visit other sites as part of their once-in-a-lifetime trip to this area. The more visitors that can be attracted to the state, the more revenue will be generated in all locations. The centennial of the Klondike Gold Rush has already attracted the attention of some organizations across the United States. The Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago will feature the Klondike Gold Rush in their primary exhibit for the 1990 summer season. They will devote almost 20,000 square feet of exhibit space to the Gold Rush theme with both indoor and outdoor attractions. This exhibit will open in Chicago on June 14th with an estimate of 4.5 million visitors expected to view the exhibit throughout the summer season. The centennial celebration will be advertised as part of this exhibit. This exhibit will be made available to other museums for use in the future years. A meeting of U.S. and Canadian national park officials was held in Buffalo, New York on March 13th and 14th. One of the principal topics was the centennial of the Klondike Gold Rush. Copies of the bills that were introduced into the Alaska State Legislature and other supporting information was forwarded to the U.S. National Park Service Office of International Affairs in Washington, D.C. for a presentation of this important meeting. And on behalf of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, we wholly endorse this project. We think it will be great for all of Alaska and specific for Skagway. So I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corr. Are there any questions?
No.
Representative Mackey.
Perhaps Mr. Corr, Representative Choquette had a question earlier to me, and I wasn't able to answer it as far as the contribution of private industry and organizations such as Chambers of Commerce. I think you've outlined some of the exhibits and different promotional things that you're doing. Was there anything else that comes to mind that might shed some light on Representative Choquette's question?
Well, I've only been with the Chamber of Commerce for the last year. I've been in private enterprise for the last 23 years, and I've been absolutely amazed at what the private sector does for events such as this. I think you'll see a sizable contribution from the private sector that will aid in any funding requirements that are needed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Corr. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify in HB 95?
I would like to testify, but if not, request is so. Yeah, I can register. Is it too late?
I'm sorry.
I would like to
testify. She hasn't signed in.
Oh, no. Fine. Please join us. That's why I'm asking. There's no one left on the list to sign up. Please join us. Just state your name, address, affiliation for the record.
My name is Susan Bell, and I work in tourism in Skagway, and have worked in tourism for the last 10 years. Jan Rentmore has asked me to speak on behalf of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and most of the points have been mentioned, so I'd just like to speak in support of the task force. I think that it's definitely significant historically. I think it's important that we educate the public, both within the state and within the country. I think it's very important that we cooperate with Canada on this promotion, and I think the economic effects will be clear within Skagway and throughout the state. And so I'd just like that to be recorded. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Susan. Are there any questions from Ms. Bell? Thank you. Representative Mackey, I earlier mentioned the appointment of any Canadian individual or official. I thought your remarks that perhaps with state funds involved it may not be appropriate, but I thought of other examples where we have several boards and commissions in our state where we do appoint people from out of state. I know it's not the same as out of country, but I don't personally see any legal problem with it, but I wonder if you would consider a friendly amendment to say that at least one of the members would be from the Yukon.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, I gave that some thought, but I was a little bit reluctant to actually put that in and then have to have it taken out. I would certainly welcome that if the committee and certainly if the International Tourism and Trade Committee wanted to work on this project a little more to define some of these things. You know, whatever makes sense, it would be acceptable to me. I just was interested in seeing that the state of Alaska contribute, you know, their fair share to this potential joint venture project.
I appreciate the comments, and I'd be, as chair of the International Trade Tourism Committee, glad to work with you on it. I personally see some value in having a Canadian voice on the task force. Is there any comment from the committee? Representative Choquette.
Mr. Chairman, I'm spending the last 3 weeks trying to cut the budget. This adds another appropriation to the budget. We've had to really reduce Project 92 in Commerce, which has been hard to do. That's a good program with the 50th anniversary of the Elkan Highway. I suspect that I'm not going to vote against this bill because it does have the governor's endorsement. But I would encourage the sponsor to continue to try and locate any funding assistance from the private sector. I think it's out there, Jerry. And I would move that we pass this bill out of committee with individual recommendations.
We'll just hold on that for a moment. Representative Bruckman had her hand up.
No, I didn't. I support the task force part, but I'm somewhat hesitant to pass it out of committee until there's a fiscal note under one.
Good point. Okay.
Let me make a comment on that, but first, if we could I consider your motion to move the bill with the friendly amendment I suggested on line,
that's right.
What would be line 10?
Jerry.
Sure, yeah, with, you know, that one member via from the Yukon, I was going to suggest that. I didn't know that you were actually requesting that right at this point, but certainly I'd be willing to accept that, and I want, you know, maybe as far as that, who that person might be, it might make sense to invite the Minister of Tourism from the Yukon Territory to sit up to be that board member.
Or appoint.
And he could probably pay his own way then.
That'd be a good point.
Hey, Mr. Chairman,
without checking with him, that... what I had suggested would be on line 10, number 3, at least one member be from the Yukon Territory.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. That would be great. That would be acceptable to me. In response to...
Would someone be willing to move the amendment?
Someone.
Thank you, Representative Brooklyn. And now the motion to move the bill from committee is before us. Regarding the Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. This may go a little bit further than a friendly amendment, but I'm trying to maybe... Cat and some of his concerns. I understand those vividly. I'm wondering if the sponsor might consider some language that would encourage matching private sector funds or something. You know, projects like this really get fired up and become eminently successful when there's some kind of hook on it to get the private sector involved with the public sector. And I've participated in several of those in South Central Alaska, and boy, when there's a few public sector dollars, the private sector dollars start chasing it real fast, and the projects really get fueled. I hadn't really thought it out until it just came up, but I don't know if that may expand beyond what the sponsor wants to do, and I understand it, having shared the last few weeks cutting the heck out of the budget too, but I don't know. Maybe we could look at, if we're going to wait for fiscal now, maybe we look at some matching grant language or something. Just a little line in there that says if the private sector gets in there with a few bucks, here comes the government alongside.
Well, Representative Baker, if it's the pleasure of the committee to move the bill, which is all right with the chairman, that was, he pretty much left it up to us and how the testimony went. We can. Pass the bill out pending fiscal note. Its next committee referral is finance, and we could attach, if the sponsor is willing, a letter of intent, which is a very common practice to suggest that private sector donations be solicited. Representative Mackey.
Yes, and I've been having some difficulties, as Representative Choquette has, with the budget process, certainly, but, you know, I did talk to the chairman of the committee, and I would respectfully request that we do move the bill on to finance in light of the fact that it is budget time and, that's an issue that the Finance Committee could consider. I think as far as the State Affairs Committee goes, in addressing some of those other concerns and whether or not this is a worthy project, I think that, you know, that that's been addressed. However, I just would like to point out that, you know, a lot of times when we're faced with funding problems, we need to look into what the benefits we're getting back into the state and into the private sector and into, you know, the ferry system and a lot of other things by taking on a project and by appropriating money. And just for the summer of 1989, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out that the visitor industry put $304 million just into the summer months. into Alaska's economy. And certainly an event of this magnitude would, I would think that could possibly generate somewhere near the same amount in 6 or 7 years from now. I don't see the visitor industry doing dramatic drops. So I guess for the bang for your buck, if you will, there will be a tremendous amount of private sector dollars being contributed into the preparation and to purchasing supplies and all the promotional efforts and upgrading facilities and all these kinds of things that are necessary and are very healthy for our economy in Alaska. So, you know, I think I'm somewhat conservative person myself, and but I wouldn't have any problem with this type of a project because of the potential impact on our economy.
Thank you, Representative Mackey. I believe Representative Choquette had his hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have no objections to moving this bill up with the understanding from the sponsor that we're talking about a fiscal note of somewhere in the tune of $50,000 to $60,000 if I add up the reductions that were spoke, and that the letter of intent also show that the fiscal note has been reduced. That is our understanding, that the fiscal note has been reduced to that point when you write a letter, Mr. Chairman, with reference to the private sector involvement. And thank you. My motion stands, sir.
All right, I'll take that as a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations, unanimous consent, fiscal note pending with letter of intent attached.
Right. There you go.
And so moved then.
All right, you're out of here.
Thank you.
Auger.
And we can work on the letter of intent.
And that took 6 years.
Yeah.
We have next before us. HJR 1 will be the next measure before us by Representative Donnelly. Right to keep and bear arms. HJR 1 proposes to amend the Alaska Constitution to enable citizens to keep and use firearms. We have several sites on teleconference where people wish to testify, as well as a fairly extensive sign-up sheet. So I request that witnesses wishing to testify by teleconference, please keep their comments brief so that we may hear from all of you. With that, I'd like to turn to Representative Donnelly, who is joining us at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go as fast as possible because I know a lot of people are waiting to testify on the teleconference line. Real simply, the state constitution has a clause, Article 1, Section 19, that is our right to bear arms clause. Unfortunately, the language of that clause is identical to the federal language of the federal constitution, and unfortunately, almost unanimously, federal courts have been interpreting that as not granting an individual right to keep and bear arms. It's a collective right. I'm not here to argue that. That's just a fact that the federal courts have refused to recognize the individual right to keep and bear arms under that language. So that has inspired many states of the United States, Mr. Chairman, to amend their constitutions or to revise their constitutions to specifically provide for an individual right to keep and bear arms. And that's simply what HJR 1 would do. This legislation has been around for quite a while, Mr. Chairman. It's passed one body or the other in, I think, the last four legislatures. There's some argument that says that possibly this would limit our ability to regulate arms. That's simply completely and absolutely fictitious. There's never been an appellate-level case in the United States of America that limited the ability of the government to regulate arms in any kind of a rational manner, Mr. Chairman. It just hasn't happened. And when several states, including Nebraska and Maine, recently went to the individual rights specifically in their constitutions, there were some lower-level courts that, out of spite and in opposition to the public process of constitutional amendment, issued opinions saying we no longer could regulate firearms and possession of felons, et cetera, et cetera. All those cases have been overturned in the last 2 years. There just isn't any appellate case. And if you want to look at in the packet, there's language from many other states what their constitutions say. The strongest of all, Mr. Chairman, is Rhode Island. And that's a state that's been around for quite a while, I would say. And they have it's just straight up. It's the clearest, the most direct language. And there's never been a problem that's ever been identified in Rhode Island from this very explicit language. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, that's over 200 years of history behind that, and it just hasn't been a problem. And we're going to hear a lot of kind of fictitious, maybe, possibly horror stories today. And provide the protections that the people of Alaska, I would say 95% of the people of Alaska, think it provides. It simply doesn't do it. And people argue the legislature, Alaska legislature, wouldn't do this, wouldn't regulate arms onerously upon its people. And that's not the point, Mr. Chairman, because this is this point in time. Constitutions aren't written for this moment in time. They're written for the rest of time, Mr. Chairman. They're written for the future. And they're not written for the majority. The majority can always protect itself through the legislature, Mr. Chairman, but minorities can't. Because majorities obviously run the political process, and that's what constitutions are for, to be the scape, to be the block, be the protection for minorities in our society. And so that's why we need a constitutional amendment on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Donnelly. Are there any questions? Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I know this question is going to be addressed, so I think that it's only appropriate to allow the sponsor to give the arguments of why is the law enforcement community against this legislation. Because I know we're going to hear from them, so I think it's appropriate that you have the opportunity to respond to that.
The law enforcement community has raised several arguments. Number one is the argument that if it's not broken, don't fix it. It clearly is broken. I mean, we don't have an individual right to keep and bear arms. Number two argument is, well, the legislature wouldn't do that anyway, limit arms in Alaska. We'd be elected out. That argument is dissolved by the fact that this is a constitutional amendment and this is a protection that should last forever for the individual people of Alaska, not for this particular moment in time that the political process isn't going to take our arms away from us now. But it could clearly be done by a later legislature. All it would take is a majority vote to do so. And it should be protected. There should be a supermajority to do this because I feel that this is what Alaskans feel they have as a constitutional right now. So it's just simply going to what most Alaskans feel they have now. And so I disagree with that argument. It's not an argument at all, as far as I'm concerned. Number three argument is somehow Alaska's constitution will be interpretably different than the other 49 states or the other 37 or 8 states that do have independent constitutional amendments. And somehow it'd be interpreted differently from the many, many, many states that have an individual right to keep and bear arms specifically in their constitutions. And I just don't think that's realistic, Representative Baker, through the chair. We do have the recent case where the Alaska Supreme Court disregarded the arguments based on the privacy clause or the, I think it was the privacy clause, about switchblade knives. We have a prohibition on switchblade knives. There was a case that went to the Supreme Court that said the privacy clause would prevent that because there's no showing that these are particularly dangerous. The Oregon Supreme Court, in fact, which struck down their switchblade law, but our court didn't do that. So this argument that our privacy clause would somehow create some sort of special interpretation of our law, of our constitutional provision for an individual right to keep arms, just doesn't cut with the line of cases that our court is looking at. And so I don't think that works either. But even so, Representative Baker, I'd be willing to add some language to this, and I've got a draft of it, that would say this clause stands alone, should be interpreted by itself and not in relation to other clauses in the Constitution. But when I've asked the opponents of it, would that make you happy? No, they're still not happy. So that's a fictitious argument, because if that was the real argument, then they would be happy with that. So that's my response to those.
Just wanted to give you the opportunity.
Thank you.
Representative Choquette.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Donnelly, people listening in on teleconference, I'm very much in favor of this resolution. I would call your attention to Section 2, which states that the resolution that's passed will be placed before the voters of the state in the next general election. This is the process that we live for in Alaska, and this is going to be the bottom line. The state residents are going to be able to vote on this resolution, and I'm very much in favor of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Choquette. Any further questions for Representative Donnelly? Thank you, Representative. Feel free to stay with us. I note that the Chairman Kabina has returned. At this time, I'll return the gavel to Representative Kabina.
Who's up?
Just to say,
I
sunshine helps them.
Yes. Ms. Zaretsky, Gail?
Mr.
Go
Chairman.
Ahead, please.
Thank you. Are we on teleconference?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee today. For the record, my name is Gail Horensky. I'm the Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Public Safety. I'm appearing on behalf of Commissioner Richard Burton. And I hope, Mr. Chairman, that the committee members have had an opportunity to see and review the position paper, which was introduced by the Department of Public Safety back January 31st. Representative Donnelly is quite active, of course, in his comments that this resolution has been around for a long time. It has taken various forms and passed various bodies and various committees over the last few years. The law enforcement community has been uniformly opposed to this measure since its introduction. There have been many, many meetings and discussions with sponsors in both the House and the Senate and various committee members. The Department of Public Safety is opposed to the resolution in its present form, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Public Safety and the administration is not opposed to having this question be presented to the voters, and we certainly agree with Representative Troquette's comments about that. Ultimately, it's the people who decide what the Constitution says, and that's entirely appropriate. Our quarrel is with the language that will be presented to the voters for their up and down vote. And our point, Mr. Chairman, is very simple. There are firearms laws in the state right now which have been passed to regulate the use and possession of weapons, deadly weapons, firearms included, in the state. And we are very concerned that the legislature not lose the ability to reasonably regulate firearms and deadly weapons. And our concern is that any proposed language merely state on its face that this right is subject to reasonable regulation by the legislature or by the state or by law. You know, the individual language certainly would be subject to negotiation, and there's no right way to do it. But our point is merely that it be clear on the face that this body, whether it's the present members or the members 100 years from now, retains the right to reasonably regulate firearms. There are many, many laws on the books now that I think most of us would agree are very important and very, very beneficial for public safety. Possession of firearms while intoxicated, possession of firearms by felons, possessions of certain firearms such as concealed weapons. We have laws regulating all of these right now, and we do not want those laws struck down. It's as simple as I can make it.
So your opinion would be that if this was included in our Constitution, that many of our existing laws would be unconstitutional?
Mr. Chairman, our concern is that it is impossible to predict how this language would be interpreted by our court. And if, in fact, the legislature intends to retain the right to reasonably regulate, that it should say so in the language of the amendment. I know that Representative Donnelly has referred to proposed language, and he was kind enough to send a copy of that language to us. And we have had a chance to look at it and reviewed it with the Department of Law, and I believe the Department of Law has responded in writing to that proposal. We never said, or at least I can assert, Mr. Chairman, that I never said that the reason why these laws would be struck down if they were would be because of the privacy clause. What we suggested in previous years and in testimony before other bodies was that the Supreme Court's decision in the Raven case, which, quote, legalized small amounts of marijuana for personal use in your own home, was a completely unintended and unforeseeable result of the adoption of the Right to Privacy Amendment in the state of Alaska in 1972 or 74, whatever it was. And we are using that as an example of the expansive interpretation that our courts give to this state constitution, and it is more expansive than the constitutions of other states. There are other states that have privacy clause. There is no other state in which that constitutional provision has been interpreted by the highest court in the land to say you can smoke dope in your own home. The right to privacy is not the problem with this amendment. The problem with this amendment is perhaps striking down existing laws which are essential for public safety and which this body, previous sessions, has adopted. A second effect of this, and I know that some members of the committee have served on local bodies before, assemblies, etc., and in its present form, this resolution would preclude the regulation by municipalities, by political subdivisions of the state, of firearms in their communities. And, for example, in Anchorage, just in last October, the Assembly adopted a municipal ordinance that precluded firearms, well, I think it was specifically handguns, on school grounds. At the present time, there is no state law that does that. Now, there is a bill pending that would address that issue right now in the House, but the municipality of Anchorage had the freedom to adopt that ordinance to protect their school children on school campuses because they perceived a need to do that, and the Constitution didn't prevent them from doing it. But the language of this amendment says, shall not be denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state. And that's a secondary effect that we're concerned about. Not only with the legislature, you lose the ability, perhaps, or that's the danger, to reasonably regulate, but so would local municipalities. That's a public policy choice. That's the legislature's decision. That's this body's decision to make. I'm just letting you know that that would be the effect of the language in this bill. Mr. Donnelly said that there are no state courts that have ever struck down, and I think he said reasonable regulation of weapons or something along the line, or hasn't unreasonably struck down. There are many, many state courts where laws regarding the possession of weapons have been struck down, and some of them have been restored by the high court recently. Nebraska is an example of that, but there are other cases where that decision was by the high court of that state, and so it has not been reversed. And Mr. Guinelli from the Department of Law is here, and I'm sure can answer questions in more detail about provisions in other states. The reply that he gave to the sponsor regarding the proposed amendment listed provisions in other states as an example for amendments that could be made here. It re-suggested language that we have suggested to the sponsors many, many times, which would be acceptable to us. There is no objection whatsoever to the intent of this provision, which I am told repeatedly is to establish clearly that it is an individual right to keep and bear arms. The Department of Public Safety has no quarrel with that whatsoever. Our only point is that if that's the intent, to make it an individual right, and you wish to retain your elected ability to pass the laws in the state in this critical public safety area, that you should say so on the face of the proposed language and let the people decide.
Representative Buckman, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't have a question, I had a comment. One of my concerns is the ability of local municipalities to make separate laws. For instance, a citizen who's traveling through Anchorage and stops on school grounds with even an unloaded weapon in the trunk of their car with no intent to get it out could be prosecuted. In other words, people don't know the differences among the smaller, all the towns in Alaska, and I'm on the side of state law superseding local ordinances. Thank you.
I just want to make a statement here. We have a number of people on teleconference. We are not going to have the time. We have session in about 15 minutes. We're not going to have the time to get to those people today to testify. This is a first hearing on this bill. It is a bill that brings up a lot of emotion with people and does have more than one side to it. And so we will be having further hearings. So I apologize to those of you on the teleconference that are not going to get to talk today. I would like to hear from sort of the other side of the issue, if I could, and hear Mr. Andrews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Shulkin. I'm not receipt of the commissioner's position paper. I'd like a copy of that.
Yes,
please.
Sir, of course.
It's like that Alaska Airlines commercial.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Andrews. Would you state your name and address for the record, please?
Yes, for the record, my name is Rip Andrews. I'm here today representing the 25,000 members of the National Rifle Association, of which I'm the field representative here in Alaska. This resolution has been before the legislature 7 years, starting with this year and beginning or ending this year. And it's had a lot of discussion, and you're correct, and emotional. Anytime that you approach an amendment to the Constitution, it's a serious matter. And this first came to our attention in 1983, and at least our membership and all gun owners in the state became quite alarmed. And as I look around this committee table, I don't see any faces from 1983, 84. So if you'll permit me just to give you a real quick brief background on why we got into this. When it first came to our attention, we thought it would be a housekeeping situation just to reestablish the individual right in the Constitution. So everybody knows it, which I think all Alaskans, as Representative Donnelly said, at least 95% of the Alaskans think or perceive they have that right already. And it came to our attention through the opinion of an attorney general. I happen to have that here, and it's really not quite an opinion, but it is close to it. I guess as close as you get on an attorney general's opinion. And this is 7183, and it's to Senator Pat Rohde and Charlie Bussell, who was a representative at that time. I will read very quickly on this. We note that the period since the adoption of the Second Amendment has witnessed an ever-increasing issuance of opinions from the judiciary of the various states and federal courts, which place limits on the individual's ability to bear arms. Some commentators have theorized that the legislative and judicial limitations increased significantly with the availability of inexpensive surplus weapons following the American Civil War. According to this theory, the increase in restrictive gun control measures and corresponding judicial interpretations was associated with increasing acquisition of firearms by recently emancipated black Americans and immigrants, coupled with the increased availability of firearms in the post-Civil War industrial America. The right of bearing arms is not a right granted by the Constitution, nor is it any in any manner dependent upon that instrument for its existence. The modern judicial view has increasingly found that the guaranteed right to keep and bear arms is not an individually protected right, but rather a collective right which allows the people of the various states to serve in a militia. The contemporary judicial view in the great majority of states interprets the constitutional language as posing no limitations on the legislature's power to regulate the ownership or control of firearms. Whatever the scope of any common law or constitutional right to bear arms, it is not absolute and does not guarantee to individuals the right to carry weapons abroad at all times and all circumstances. I'm not exactly sure what all that means, but sure worried the hell out of a lot of people, myself included. And that was the quick background of why we got into this amendment process. The resolution before you, HGR 1, does several things, of which Ms. Horesky did touch on some. It does guarantee firearm ownership, and it defines the individual right. It also does something that we call preemption of local authority, with the exception of discharge. We think that this is probably the proper way to go here in Alaska, where firearm laws are made and passed by the state legislature. We have a hodgepodge of local ordinances now where unknowingly legal, law-abiding citizens can run afoul of these things. We're not opposed to reasonable regulation. But for example, just to point up what I'm trying to make a point here on is that in Anchorage, they have an ordinance on the concealed carry of firearms. And the ordinance says you may not carry on or about. As you all know, there is no state permit for carrying concealed. We really don't know what on or about means. I've heard it defined in past years by three different chiefs of police in Anchorage, and each one is different. It places the officer on the scene at any one time in a very uncomplimentary position. He really doesn't know how to interpret what on or about means. One of the things we think that we can do with this amendment is to put all the firearm regulations of the state into one book, so that every citizen knows what the firearm and weapon regulations are in the state. We certainly share the Anchorage community's concern about persons with loaded firearms on school grounds and other public buildings. Why isn't that a state law? There are other state laws, and this legislature has passed one. But again, that's an Anchorage ordinance, and maybe it should be a statewide law. I'm not sure. We've also heard that the law enforcement community in Alaska is opposed to this. I would say that the organizations of the Alaska Chiefs of Police, their board of directors, the board of directors of the Alaska Peace Officers, are in opposition to this. But if you get down to where the rank and file people are, what I call the beer drinkers in our society, I don't think that there's universal opposition. The people that ride in the patrol cars and walk the beach and do all the other enforcement, I think have, by and large, a different opinion. It is not universally accepted that the law enforcement community in Alaska is opposed to this. The directors of these two organizations, and even that's not 100%. There are chiefs of police in this state that I think would go along with this, and that's what they've told me. Talking about some of the state Supreme Court decisions recently, we have seen where the terminology reasonable regulation in the states of Nebraska and Maine on firearms, where this type of a constitutional amendment was introduced into their constitution, has been upheld by their state Supreme Courts. And again, the Supreme Court decision may give you a different viewpoint as the one in West Virginia. The Supreme Court case in West Virginia struck down the state statute on firearms because it was not reasonable. It was unreasonable. And I don't want to take this committee's time to point out how unreasonable it was, but if you were a prospective purchaser of a firearm, particularly a handgun in West Virginia, you had to advertise in the newspaper of your county, adjacent counties, for several weeks of your intention to purchase. Number one, you had to post a personal bond of $5,000. You had to prove that you had passed a proficiency course. You had to have letters that you were of high moral character. And I can guarantee in the Bible Belt of West Virginia, if you're a single, unwed mother, you'll never get a letter of moral high integrity to get a permit to buy a handgun. So it was struck down as unreasonable.
Mr. Andrews, may I interrupt there? Of course, I don't think that anything like that has happened in Alaska. I think you're trying to solve the problems of the nation by amending our Constitution. May it not be better that this whole debate be going on with the national constitution rather than with individual state constitutions? And could you address that issue?
How much time do we have, Mr. Chairman?
We have about 3 minutes left.
Well, as far as I know, the Supreme Court has never made a decision contrary on the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. We're dealing here with the Alaska Constitution, and that's exactly where I think we should be on this issue.
But doesn't our Constitution mirror the national Constitution in its present form?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chairman, and with the exception of some punctuation, it does mirror. And the comment has been made that if the law isn't broke, why fix it? But I think we're pointing out that it is broke because we have an Attorney General's, I guess you'd call it semi-opinion, that causes us a lot of concern. And it's true that every attorney general that we have, you know, can issue a new and different opinion. But we're concerned about the future on this thing, and I think most Alaskans that own firearms are.
Questions from the committee? Well, Representative Donald.
Just real quick, Rip, I'm sure the reason you raised the West Virginia case, because that is probably one of the only appellate level cases where a law was thrown out by a court based on its constitutional amendment. But if anybody cites that, they're just being way, way misrepresenting to this committee that stands for anything like that in Alaska, that would be because of the foundations of what law was thrown out, which was clearly discriminatory against poor people, minorities, and other people from ever having a chance to own one of those type of firearms.
I guess the reason I brought that up, Mr. Chairman, is that our council advises us that this constitutional amendment will in no way change or restrict the present firearm laws here in Alaska that are already existing on the books. That's a charge that we think is unfounded.
This Let me let the committee know and members of the public know my intentions on this resolution. It is a constitutional amendment. Obviously, it has to pass the legislature by 2/3 of the votes. It has passed the Senate in previous years. This particular bill has not got through the House. I have about 13 constitutional amendments here in this committee. My intentions are to, from time to time, try to hear some of those from now and into the session, to that this committee in the fall of this year, after summer and everybody's done fishing, why, to take these constitutional amendments on the road to Anchorage, Fairbanks, Nome, North Slope, the peninsula, some various places to allow the people of the state to give their opinions so that we can make a decision when we come back next year which of these bills, constitutional amendments that we feel that we should pass on to the next committee as a referral and to the full House. So that's my plans, I hope that all you people that are on teleconference forgive us for not getting on here, but you will have more time, and we will also try to get to as many communities as we can on this and other constitutional issues. So I also apologize to other people in the room here that wanted to testify. I'm sorry that we just don't have the time today, but again, this is only step one in the House, so we'll come back. Is there anything else from the committee? Okay, if not, let me say that the next meeting is scheduled.
There's no editorial.
Excuse me. There's no meeting scheduled for Friday the 22nd because of budget overviews. The next meeting will be Monday, March 25th. At that time, we'll be hearing House Bill 181 relating to salary schedules for state employees, House Bill 182 relating to appropriation for public employees, COLA, and other bills previously heard. And we will try to bring, is it 18? Can it be 18? At that time, we'll attempt to. Meeting adjourned. Time is 9:55, and thank you. I don't know if I was